local news and views and the greatest variety of music, this is Southern FM 88.3.
Welcome to episode 8 of our Spatio specials on the American Space Program for the 21st century. I'm Andrew Rennie. This was the title of a conference called by President Obama and hosted by the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. This invitation-only event was designed to both explain the new directions being set by Obama's new space policy and to garner ideas on how to implement it. So there I was in 2010 April, just meters from President Obama and rubbing shoulders with the likes of NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden and Larry Garver, astronauts Buzz Aldrin, John Grunsfeld and Andy Thomas, plus other movers and shakers in America's space program. With Obama's, Bolden's and Augustine speeches done, if not yet fully digested, it was time for the breakout sessions. In last week's program, we heard the first speakers at a session called Jumpstarting the New Technologies to Take Us Beyond. By beyond, they mean beyond Earth's low Earth orbit, that is above 1,000 kilometres. Norman Augustine, who chaired the committee that set the new course for human space exploration adopted by President Obama, was moderator for this session. But shush, Augustine is about to introduce the next speaker, whose talk is entitled A New Space Enterprise.
And then lastly will be Doug Cook, who is a Texas Aggie with a Bachelor of Science degree in aerospace engineering. He has over 35 years of experience pretty much covering the main human spaceflight programs, the space shuttle, the space station, and now exploration programs. He's been assigned important responsibilities to carry out the program that we've heard about. In March of 1993, when NASA undertook the redesign of the ISS, he led the engineering and technical aspects of that redesign. He was a NASA technical advisor to the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, and he currently is the Associate Administrator for Exploration Systems Mission Directorate.
I'm going to concentrate today and focus on what we're doing in the area of research and technology. And I think the things that Bobby has talked about are overarching and directly apply to the things I'll talk with you about. Actually, we will be working closely together to make sure we coordinate the overarching aspects of his particular responsibilities as well as the more focused efforts that we'll have in exploration technologies. A number of the emerging technologies that he will be working to develop will find on-ramp into our programs in technology. So that will be an important facet of our relationship at NASA in the future. What I wanted to do is pull all of this together in a way to visualize what we're talking about. If we look at the destinations that are possible for human spaceflight, there are a number of possibilities with our grandest vision, ultimately sending people to Mars. And you've heard about the various destinations in the discussions. I do want to say that it is important to understand what it takes to go do these missions. Just yesterday, we kicked off the Human Exploration Framework that's an agency-wide team to go develop the design reference missions, if you will, for going to these various destinations so that we can work into them impacts or leverage that you get from various technologies. As you go look at these destinations, you learn that there are certain capabilities that it takes to send people there, and many of them are common between the various destinations. So it's important to understand that so that we, in the future, plan our programs in a way that get us the most capability and versatility in our infrastructure, in our launch and space infrastructure. All of these lead you to a set of capabilities and technology and research that it takes to go do these missions. And you find that it shows the leverage of the various technologies that it takes to go to Mars. And you absolutely probably cannot do it unless we go invest in these technologies. They're absolutely essential. There's a list of them. They've been repeated in reports. Actually, I've been on a couple of those reports myself over the last 20 years. And they are called out time after time, and there are areas that we have to invest in if we're going to go beyond places we've been before. In terms of breakthrough technologies, these are the kind of things that will come out of what the work that Bobby does that leads into new possibilities and on-ramps for certain technologies that will be critical to us as well. And we'll find leverage in making these destinations. So this, I think, kind of pulls together the thinking that it takes to understand what the critical technologies are. The various technology areas that are in the exploration president's budget request, it starts with the exploration technology and demonstrations, which includes flagship technology demonstration program. It includes enabling technology development and demonstration program. These are two different areas that I'll talk more about. It also includes heavy lift propulsion technology, including first stage engine development. It includes upper stage or in-space engine demonstration, and it includes foundational propulsion research. These are areas where there are very enhancing technologies that need to be developed in order to make our launch vehicles more efficient and easier to operate. The next area is exploration precursor robotic missions. I won't be talking about that because it's being talked in another session, but it does factor into this whole approach in that these robotic missions that we'll be planning in our programs will be the opportunity to go learn about the destinations that we'll send people to, but it will be we'll be able to demonstrate the technologies that are essential for human spaceflight to the destinations, and we'll be testing in the relevant environment. So these will be focused on that kind of knowledge. We also have the Human Research Program, which has increased funding. All of these will be robust areas where we will be investing in research that it takes to send people into space. We get into more of the exploration technology development demonstration. These are many of the same technologies identified over a period of time that are incredibly important to us and have high leverage and actually are essential in terms of going beyond the places we've been before. Advanced in-space propulsion is a big driver. Getting to high-efficiency in-space engines is critical in getting the mass down in low Earth orbit so that in terms of fuel that it takes to get to these destinations, particularly the long duration flights to places like Mars. Autonomous systems and avionics will help us to operate more efficiently in space. Cryogenic propellant storage and transfer is one that we will need as we work in space with large amounts of fuel to go to long destinations far from here and not have the boil-off that occurs in some of our propellants. Entry, descent, and landing is a critical technology, especially with the large masses that it takes to send people to surface locations. Developing precision landing and hazard avoidance so that we can land in very interesting locations on other planetary bodies is important to us, as well as the aerodynamic braking technologies that we'll need to enter atmospheres. EVA technology will be important because our suits have to get lighter if we're going to other planets. Surface suits can't be as heavy as our current space suits are. High-efficiency power systems are also important in order to get down mass, in order to be able to actually have enough power in a place like Mars with reduced sunlight, since it's farther out, in order to operate there with people. Human robotic systems. Robots and humans working together expand our capabilities when we send people to achieve the science goals and exploration goals that we'll have so that we make people more productive when they get to these locations. In situ resource utilization is the use of indigenous chemicals or minerals at a location like Mars to develop your own fuel to make the trip back so that you don't have to carry all that fuel with you. Life support and habitation systems. It's important to get to closed-loop life support so that we don't have to carry all the logistics and resupply in terms of water and air. Lightweight spacecraft materials and structures are incredibly important to us in terms of getting mass down. All of these we plan to have demonstrations for over time, where we will have different demos on different capabilities, whether they're in this arena or in the flagship missions, in order to demonstrate that and reach the higher readiness levels that we need to go into development on systems. This addresses the human research program. Biomedical technologies are important. We need to keep our astronauts safe. As we get into these various missions, there are different hazards that they have to deal with, and we have to keep them safe in order to achieve the missions. We will be doing a fair amount of this on space station. It is a critical resource for long-duration missions in microgravity. Space radiation research is incredibly important to us as we will be testing, understanding the effects on human cells of intergalactic cosmic radiation. It's a radiation that's out beyond that affects our astronauts once they get outside the Earth's magnetic field. It's not as much a danger in space station, but once we go on these long missions, we'll be out in it, and we don't yet understand totally what the effects are of that radiation. So that could be a long pole for us for long duration missions. Behavioral health research is important from the standpoint of understanding crew interactions over long periods of times on these long trips. Space station utilization, as I mentioned, will be critical, and our investment will be increased there over what we have been planning. We'll be learning more about the human risks associated with microgravity that they will experience both in orbit around the Earth, but also on long-duration missions. We'll be adding new content to that research through research announcements that will add to the things that we'll learn there. Next, I'll move into an area that is very exciting for us, which is the flagship technology mission area, where we will be testing at larger scales and gradually larger scales different capabilities that are essential to us. Some of what our teams have mapped out in the last few weeks are listed across on the left-hand column, which are propellant transfer and storage, lightweight inflatable modules, automated rendezvous and docking, closed-loop life support, aero capture and entry, descent, and landing, advanced space propulsion. And we have a number of missions across the top which are candidate missions at this point, but we have put together some ideas to get the existence proof. What is it that we can accomplish within the FY11 budget request? And so you see multiple X's on certain of these missions where we can accomplish objectives for some of these technology areas in a single mission. This is an example. As we put together our advanced space propulsion, we can start with existing capabilities, the kind of capabilities that have been developed in ion engines for missions like Deep Space One and Dawn, and begin to do some of our begin with a bus basically that can do multiple missions for us in these technology areas that will gradually increase in capability, building to higher megawatt or higher kilowatt and then megawatt class in space power capabilities, whether it's solar power or fission power, as we get to ultimately the high efficiency propulsion capabilities, whether it's plasma engines or nuclear thermal propulsion. This one talks about in space propellant storage and transfer. These are some ideas on how we might start that with one of these buses that I mentioned earlier, having a six-month stay with cryo storage, working through and employing the technology to in cryo cooling and maintaining cryo fuels in space. Also, the first step would probably be to transfer some of this fuel on board a single spacecraft. The step beyond that could be multiple spacecraft where we're testing out connectors and flow through between one spacecraft and another. In that type of scenario, we'd also be checking out automated rendezvous and docking. So as we move through these steps, we gradually increase our capabilities. We understand the technologies engaging, understanding how much fuel that you have in a tank, how much you've transferred, which is not simple either, as we work through understanding these types of technologies. The next chart talks to inflatable technology. We would start with small inflatables on station to test out that technology. We would grow over time to larger modules that are inflatable, where we could scar for life support systems, and a capability that we've worked out in the last few years called suit ports, where you actually get past the idea of airlocks, and you can actually transfer directly into suits from your spacecraft. Obviously, space station is the location where you can also test out new spacesuit technology. We also are looking at a roadmap, and we'll be working closely with Bobby on this one as we bring in the emerging technology inflatable heat shields, where it combines new technology in both aero and aero heating with inflatable shapes. And this just shows a progression through the types of demonstrations that we would do in the flagship mission to demonstrate these types of entry vehicles. We would also look at not just blunt shapes, but mid-L over D shapes, lift-to-drag shapes that would be able to maneuver a little more in a Mars environment. Mars is going to be a unique concern in terms of entry, descent, and landing, because you can't just use a heat shield and then put the chutes out and land with the large vehicle that it takes to send people. So that will be a unique case that we'll have to develop with a lot of propulsion during descent, potentially early use of the hypersonic inflatable shapes to slow it down, and then the precision landing and hazard avoidance once you get near the ground. I think when you pull all these together, all these ideas together, you see that this program does seek to extend human presence throughout the solar system. Our budget request this year, the FY11 budget request that the President talked about today, will focus on these capabilities that I've outlined in terms of getting us to potential destinations, moving out beyond Earth orbit to places we have not been before, and staying for lengths of time in those places that we have not done. This investment will focus on learning, getting information and knowledge about the locations that we go to, that we'll send people to, as well as developing the capabilities to get there. So the approach expands the alternatives and the unique capabilities that are needed, that are through strategic investments that are very much needed in order to be able to conceive of going to some of these distant locations. And with that, I'll turn it back to Norm.
That was Doug Cook, NASA's Associate Administrator for Exploration Systems Mission Directorate, and that's located at NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C. With the headline X out of the way, it was time for panel moderator Norm Augustine to throw the session open to comments from the floor. Australian-born NASA astronaut Andy Thomas was up in a flash and was first to the microphone.
Ed talked initially about the need for organizations to be agile in their approach to these activities in order to be successful. At JSC and at NASA, we have complex system engineering processes in place which have been codified and institutionalized into the organization. And while they're very thorough in what they do, they're not really what you would call agile. How can we create that kind of agile environment that we need in order to take on these challenges that have been described?
Well, that's a great question. Ed, I think we'll start with you, and then let either Bobby or Doug follow up if they wish.
Okay. I think that's a great point, Andy. And I actually wanted to ask a question of Doug first, or maybe a comment. My thought was that there's so many things that you want to test out there. My actual feeling is that unless NASA changes the way it does business, as Andy alluded to, none of that is going to happen, meaning not at a pace that will really lead to what the President asked for. That will take essentially forever, the way NASA does things. And I think there is a sort of form follows function thing in that you need to set things up such that it is easy to do a flight test. Because there are so many flight tests required to do all those things you mentioned. There must have been 50 up there or more, 50 or 100 different flight tests required to just initially test all the technologies you list up there. And if you're testing one of these every 6 months, then you can count the number of years and you can see that that's never going to happen. So I think, again, to make the system operate fast, we need to build a system that's capable of moving quickly. and that means very rapid.
The nature of this, these sets of programs that have been laid out, we'll be putting pretty much in rapid motion these demonstration, flagship demonstration missions, the robotic missions. We'll be combining some of these technologies, of course, with on some of these missions. We're planning to start 4 flagship technology demonstrations in FY11 with more to follow thereafter. And we'll be working on the first few robotic missions as well. We also have, which I didn't mention, I meant to, scout mission capability, which will be very small spacecraft, possibly grouped on a single launch vehicle that can demonstrate or provide information on for multiple purposes. So I think you're right. I think in order to get through this, we'll have to be agile. I think by biting some of these off into chunks that are shorter term and more often, we'll get to that point.
That was a panelist's response to a comment by Australia's very own Andy Thomas, who is a NASA astronaut. When I spoke to him during the conference, he told me that he was working on aspects of the Constellation program, a program which had just been cancelled by President Obama. You can hear my interview with him by visiting the Space Show pages at www.southernfm.com.au/space, and then going to the 2010 interviews page and scrolling down to June the 16th. Links there will take you to some of my photographs of Andy Thomas at the conference. Now back to that conference, the concept of distributed research groups was put forward by an educator attending the conference.
Excuse me, MJ Swallow, University of Central Florida. The comments about the predictions 1939, I think after the Second World War, we gathered all the Nobel Prize winners together to say what's going to happen in the next 50 years, and they missed almost everything. With that comment in mind and thinking about what Ed said about doing experiments, lots of them, what about a different architecture for the research that involves, by way of analogy, some of the things that have been done with PCs to string them all together to make one supercomputer, but instead of that, human capital? We have lots of chaos at universities. Every year we get a whole new class of chaos at universities. What about putting some emphasis on suborbital flights? There's lots of experiments that can be done in suborbital flights, zero-gravity experiments, structural experiments, propulsion experiments, et cetera, on a very small scale, very rapid turnaround, that would involve lots of people. I think the problem now with NASA missions, from a university standpoint, it sometimes costs us millions of dollars even to compete for one. And there are years and years, and only a few people play. So if we can engage a broader spectrum of the intellect that's out there, that's interested, hungry, enthusiastic, young, don't know what can't be done, etc., I propose that perhaps an architecture using distributed kind of research with using suborbital flights to address many of the things that were on your list might be useful.
Thank you, Bobby.
Yeah. So former university professor, it probably doesn't surprise you that I would agree with your statement. And one of the things that we're working on is to capitalize, if you will, on all possible platforms, right? When I talk about relevant flight environments, right, each technology has a relevant flight environment. And it's important that we choose the lowest cost or the most accessible test bed so that we can do many tests of that technology in the relevant flight environment. If something can be proven on the ground, then great, let's do it on the ground. If it requires a high-altitude balloon or a sounding rocket flight, let's do that. Not everything has to be its own low-Earth orbit flight test, or, you know, we don't need necessarily to go out to Mars, for example, to prove every technology, just to prove it in the space environment. I take your point very seriously. And in addition, I do want to say that through these programs where we're going to have a steady cadence of flight testing, where we're going to have a steady cadence of demonstrations and test programs, not just paper studies, we do intend to involve a broader community, in particular the university research community and industry.
Steve Squires is well known to regular Space Show listeners. From Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, he is the principal investigator for the Mars Exploration Rovers. One of them, Opportunity, is still trundling across the Mirradani Plain more than 7 years after landing for a planned 3-month mission. He well knows the intricacies of getting approval to get hardware into space. He told me when he visited Melbourne several years ago that he never wanted to go through that process again. As he said, I've scratched that particular itch. Recently, he led the Decadal Review of the United States Unmanned Planetary Exploration. He made these comments to the conference.
Steve Squires, Cornell University. One of the main things that I'm doing these days is helping to run the NRC's Planetary Decadal Survey. And one of the problems that we have identified as a big, big issue is what we've referred to informally as the TRL Valley of Death. Historically, NASA's done a great job of taking real low technology readiness level ideas and moving them to sort of mid-range technology readiness, but getting them to the point where they're ready for flight and where a project manager is ready to accept the risk of using that technology has been an area where we believe the agency has fallen short. And so my question for this group, and I guess particularly for Doug and Bobby, is in the president's plan for NASA going forward, what's going to change to make that better?
So that's a great question, Steve, and I'm very familiar with the Valley of Death, having tried to get through it several times in the past unsuccessfully. The big change really is the new program, right? The space technology program in particular is set up to get through that valley and to deliver technologies and capabilities beyond TRL of 6, so beyond testing in a relevant environment. In addition, that cross-cutting capability demonstration program that I mentioned quickly will only sponsor technologies in which a customer has already been identified and in which that customer is actually providing a portion of the funding for that demonstration to prove their interest in flying that technology in the future. So we'll have a handshake deal up front, along with some cash, actually, from that customer to fly that technology on some future mission. And then through this new program, which I need to tell you didn't exist previously, we'll have the capability to take these technologies from concept all the way to flight.
The tough part, of course, is always protecting technology funds when money
Absolutely.
Gets tight, and I wish you the best of luck with that.
And here is a final comment thrown into the ring for consideration.
Hi, my name is Jim Fenton. I'm at the Florida Solar Energy Center, just 15 minutes away. I agree. This is about technology. I've heard innovation. I've heard agile. I did not hear inspiration. I heard motivation. Motivation is to push people to do things they don't want to do. NASA famously inspired a generation of future scientists and engineers. I want NASA to do that again. I want inspiration up there with the words innovation and technology.
We have been at the Kennedy Space Center on Florida's Space Coast. The topic has been how to jumpstart the new technologies to take us beyond low Earth orbit and out to the Moon, asteroids, and Mars. This program has been one of a series using material I recorded whilst at the Kennedy Space Center conference on the ways to push the American space program into the 21st century. It was researched, written, and produced by Andrew Rennie.
For local news and views and the greatest variety of music, this is Southern FM 88.3.